Hello, and here's another offer for our Wax Lyrical listeners. Today's guest, Orla Weir from Ugly Drinks, invites you to try Ugly's range for yourself. Just use the code WAXLYRICAL for 30% off your next order at uglydrinks.co.uk. That's code WAXLYRICAL at uglydrinks.co.uk. And here's the episode. Hello, and thank you for downloading Wax Lyrical, the scale-up and change-up marketing podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. And I'm Mark Renicus.
And I'm Harry Neal. And today's podcast guest is Orla Weir, Global Direct-to-Consumer and Brand Manager for Ugly Drinks. Welcome to Wax Lyrical, Orla. Hello, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So for anyone who hasn't tried or seen an Ugly Drink, it makes sense to probably start with a bit of an introduction of the brand and who you are. So firstly, Ugly is obviously a drinks brand, and you're in a relatively new drink sector for the UK, at least. It's been around in the US a little bit more, which is known as seltzers. So first question, what are seltzers? And more importantly, what is an Ugly seltzer?
So yeah, Ugly, we launched back in 2016. Ugly is a flavoured sparkling water. It's literally water, bubbles and natural flavours that come from the oils, extracts and essences of real fruit. So it doesn't contain any sugar, sweeteners or calories. So you get this kind of fun flavoured fizzy drink, but without any of the sugary or sweet stuff that you would in traditional sodas. And we as a brand are on a mission to disrupt big soda by making a water product more fun and appealing and affordable and accessible for everyone. And we try to do this by celebrating imperfectionism and realness and the ugly truth.
And I think you were there almost from the very beginning, weren't you? Joining almost straight after university, if I've done my LinkedIn stalking right. So can you tell us about the journey you went on? Because it's clearly a very provocative brand, you know, a name like Ugly. So it's really in your face, which I love. So can you take us on the journey? How did you come up with the name? And as you said, how does it fit in with that fighting against big soda? Is that a thing now? Or have I just created a category?
No, we call it Big Soda. So I don't know, maybe we both created it. No idea, to be honest. I was really inspired by the mission that our two co-founders, Joe and Hugh, had set about to take on. I myself was a huge soda drinker. I would have about four Diet Cokes a day, let alone whatever I drank in kind of sugary and sweetened sodas. And so I kind of like, I knew the addiction because I had it myself. And I mean, today, I think, and at the time, it's around about 30% of adults that are clinically obese and about 66% that are overweight, and 3.9 million people in the UK that have diabetes. So what Joe and Hugh were really doing was trying to give people an alternative that meant that they didn't need to compromise on that kind of soda fizz and soda feeling. And quite often, as I'm sure you guys know, you'll kind of go into the supermarket and look for health products and they're either incredibly expensive or just quite, I guess, elegant and not in your face and very like simple and clean and sometimes a bit clinical. And I guess what the guys felt was missing from that space was a product that was accessibly priced for people who wanted to swap out of soda, but also a brand that just had a bit of attitude and that kind of like fun, as you said, in your face attitude that those big soda companies have kind of evoked for the last however many years. So yes, I joined Ugly from day one. Our offices were in a shipping container in Elephant and Castle, which sounds really cool and fun and startup-y until you are absolutely frozen or absolutely baking in the summer. but it was very, very good fun. In the very, very early days, we had actually really just designed the product and we had a name, and the guys themselves came up with the name, working with a small agency at the time. And they were given kind of all of the I guess, obvious names that you might associate with this type of product. They were given like Splash Water and stuff that was kind of really indicative of like what the product was. But I think they wanted to create something that was bigger than that and do something that was more subversive and more differentiated, I guess. And so they bandied about a ton of different names, some of which I actually don't think I can say on this podcast because they would never have been able to be allowed on a supermarket shelf. But one of the names that came up in that process was this idea of being ugly. And at the time when the guys were chatting about it and myself, it was kind of about really just that idea of like individualism and like warts and all and like not over prettifying everything and just being really, really like brutal and upfront and honest. And that really stemmed from the fact that it felt like at the time, Big Soda would kind of, as we come up with, Big Soda would sort of disguise everything for you. So they would tell you that you would open a can of happiness, but in actual fact, this product was resulting in 3.9 million people having diabetes. So it felt like really what they were looking for at the time was a product that like shouted authenticity. And that was quite genuinely before authenticity was like the buzzword of the decade. So it's kind of, when I say it now, it seems very generic, but at the time that actually was an incredibly subversive thing to be talking about. So we did that first year where we really worked on like grassroots sales and marketing activity in London, tons of samplings. We went into Whole Foods. We were in kind of, the ambition was like every independent store in London. And we were just like, we want to have this omnipresence in all of the places that our customers, which was kind of this younger gender neutral demographic in London, product that was for everyone, would find us in. So convenience stores, nice coffee shops, health food stores, you name it. So that was kind of the first year. And that took us to round about, I think it was 2017, if I'm getting my years right, which is when we started working with Jones Knowles Ritchie, who were an awesome branding agency that have worked with a lot of big beverage brands. And we kind of went to them and said, look, we've got this name. We've called this product ugly. It was maybe a mental thing to do, but we knew that Coca-Cola and Pepsi wouldn't do it and we could. So what can you do with it? This is what it is. This is what we stand for. And like, how can you help us build this brand further? And what they did is they kind of took that product and that name and built this amazing brand world around it. So they really defined this concept for us of the ugly truth, which has become everything we stand for as a brand. And that fits into, I guess, four separate verticals. So the product itself is really like challenging the ugly truth of sugar and sweetener in drinks and like, do you need it? Can you have fun without it? Can you have a delicious product without it? Which, by the way, I think you can. It's obviously why I do the job I do. The second vertical is packaging. So really trying to create a more sustainable future for the planet. That's why we exist in a recyclable can. We are not perfect. There's plastic in our supply chain, and something as a small brand, we're really ambitious about and want to try and work on as we grow and expand. We've had our own challenges with it, of course. The third vertical is all of our tone of voice and communications. And that's really just about being totally BS free. So some of the lines we'll communicate are ugly is this kind of like anti-attainable lifestyles or no ridiculous promises, and just being really real with our customers where we can. And then the final one of that is kind of more societal. So partnering with causes that tackle ugly truths in the wider world that are bigger and beyond even what we're doing. And that's kind of where the name comes from. And we try to thread that through everything we do. And yeah.
And if you're listening, I urge you to go and look at the website, because what Orla has just described, it really does come to life. Every place that you touch the website, the language is everything that you've said. So congratulations on creating this very, very distinctive brand.
And I think, like you said, it's kind of, it goes beyond even that sort of tone of voice and mission. So a lot of the product is kind of being created to have this sort of like graffiti sticker style effect. And part of that was about how we wanted to feel like rebels as a brand, not necessarily anarchists. We're not like just shouting about nothing. We're kind of, we have this important mission to us, and we want to rebel against the fact that people are being kind of given these sugary and sweetened products, but told they're all about something else. So that even the Ugly logo itself has within the U is kind of shaped like a tongue. And for us, that was always about sticking your tongue out at the big dogs. And that's on the back of the can. And all of our sort of fruit flavors or different flavors have their own kind of characters and mascots and personalities that come with them. And it truly is like an incredibly exciting world when you dig into it, with an incredibly visual brand behind it. So I'm super blessed to be able to work on it.
As someone who is also a self-diagnosed soda addict, I can definitely say that it's a brand that really does stand out, kind of as Mark says, on the website, in store, everywhere you see it. Could you tell us a little bit more about who the target market or the target audience is, and when and why are they drinking Ugly?
We have a super digitally native brand. And so what's been incredibly exciting for us is the launching online has given us a lot of insight into who we're speaking to and who Ugly is popular with. We find that our target consumer is a slightly younger demographic. We tend to over-index with Gen Z, so 18 to 24. And we're also entirely gender neutral, which is quite uncommon for a lot of seltzer brands. Seltzer in the US is like a $5 billion category. And even with the UK brands that we're seeing pop up, from our understanding, they tend to over-index with a more female audience. And I think that maybe is something to do with the kind of like stereotypically lighter branding, maybe a bit more delicate, whereas Ugly, as we've said, is just has an like incredible attitude and is totally in your face. And it really just, it's completely ungender specific. So that's been super exciting for us to see. And I think when speaking to that younger demographic, I mean, I'm super careful not to stereotype this because it's a psychographic, right? It's not a demographic. My mom is a total Gen Z. but I think the reason we see sort of prevalence within that widespread group of people is because the kind of characteristics that are associated with that group is that they tend to be incredibly purpose-driven activists. So they get the standing up for things that are important. Also, of course, incredibly digitally native. And then what we're seeing a lot of over the last few years with the rise of things like TikTok is this kind of dismissiveness to like the perfect lifestyles that we've all seen curated on Instagram. It's all about this kind of imperfect, unpolished content in the moment. Everything's on video. And that is like everything we speak to at Ugly. Everything is messy and real and warts and all, which is quite good as a marketeer because it means every time you mess up, you're like, oh, I did that on purpose.
You've talked very eloquently about the brand. You clearly are the brand guardian, but you've got a big job because you're also responsible for the direct-to-consumer channels. Now, I know you do more than just sell to consumers, because when we were chatting before we recorded, you told me that you talk to consumers a lot. That must be really powerful. Now, I think you even do co-creation and all kinds of things. Tell us what you're getting from those conversations with your customers.
I think the way we see our online e-commerce platform is that it's not just commerce, it's also content and it's also community. It's like the three C's. I did not say that. Someone else way more intelligent than me said it, and I read it in an article. We really use that online platform as kind of an opportunity to have a one-to-one relationship with all of our kind of diehard Ugly fans. I think like where that came from initially is that selling drinks online is like a kind of mental thing to do. They're really heavy to post, particularly, I mean, across the UK, of course, but particularly across the US. And when we first launched our supply chain out there, we had cans that were going through such varying temperatures and such long distances. And we were totally clueless to it being this like UK born team. So we had cans exploding in the back of vans because they were expanding. So we had all sorts of crazy issues with like the delivery process. And equally Ugly, as I've said, it's aimed to be at a really accessible price point. So with our online bundles, you can get Ugly from 62 pence a can. We're really trying to be price competitive with those big soda companies. That, of course, means that we're not working with these super high margin products and we're kind of shipping these really heavy drinks. So in summary, totally mad thing to do to sell drinks online. And so for us, we were like, we had to take a step back and say, why would we do that? What is the objective for us and what do our customers get out of it? Why would we exist there? And really the conclusion we came to is that by having this online channel where we have this one-to-one relationship, we've got an incredible opportunity to build community, an amazing opportunity to launch innovation quickly, to drive trial, to drive awareness, but also just to understand our customers, who they are, what they want to see from us. And then to take all of that information and feed that into our total omni-channel business so that the things we're doing in retail, again, are what our customers want to see. And it's not just, you know, at the time, the four of us making decisions. That's an incredibly small sample set. It's totally useless. The idea that we came up with was this kind of concept of bringing the Flavor Lab into all of our customers' homes, because something we have so much fun doing at Ugly is trying all the different kind of crazy flavors you can make with this product. So although you might have seen our products on the shelves, which are like lemon and lime and berry and strawberry and cherry, we have also tried things like a product that tastes like rain. So they literally made sparkling water taste like rain. And we've tried such kind of quirky and crazy things. And we had so much fun with that, that we felt that would be a really exciting thing to bring to our customers. So as of, I think we started in May in 2020, we decided that every single month we were going to launch a new limited edition flavor of Ugly. That spanned last year. We did cherry cola seltzer, marshmallow seltzer, Dr. Ugly seltzer, which is a riff on a particular soda brand. We did a pumpkin spice in fall that totally tanked. We did a candy cane at Christmas. So lots of kind of crazy, fun, quirky flavors. And each month we launched them, we would survey all of the customers that purchased them and ask them tons of questions like, did they like the packaging? Were there too many emails? Did we spam them? What do they want to see next? And we kept trying to prompt this idea of like, what's the craziest thing we can do for you guys? How can we make this more and more fun? And the responses we got were absolutely mad. We had people asking for like a keg of Ugly, which is a very complicated thing to make. So we've not tackled that one yet. But all sorts of really crazy fun flavors. And then we just took that consensus and would launch them. Some of the buyers in the US that we were speaking to that had previously, you know, said, well, this is a huge category and we've got Pepsi seltzer and Coke seltzer on the shelf. Why would we have Ugly? It's a cool brand, but you know, we're tight for space. And we took these products to them and we said, hey, we've got these hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people saying they love this. Here's all the proof. And then they try the product and be like, this is amazing. So what that actually facilitated was a launch into 6,500 CVS stores and actually 10,000 plus with a variety of new kind of distribution points across the US. So that's led to this kind of mainstream distribution in the United States. And we also then launched that program in July in the UK. So,
and I have to ask, what does rain flavored seltzer taste like?
It's absolutely gross. I mean, it tastes like rain. I don't know if anyone enjoys that.
I can't remember what rain tastes like. I've not stuck my tongue out in the rain for a while, but I would do it. The next time it's raining, I will do it.
Yeah, you're absolutely going to have to do it, Mark. I do that. Maybe that's a sign of my maturity levels, but there we go.
You can blame it on flavor testing, I suppose.
Yeah, just product testing. That's why I try to just eat things in the outdoors and stuff. Yeah, Matt.
So you've explained a little bit more about how you're an omni-channel business and around how digital is obviously so important to you. Are there any channels that you haven't tried, and what would they be, and what would it look like if you were going to go on those channels?
Do you know, I think the one that we haven't tapped into yet is probably on-premise, so bars and things like that. I think it would be a really exciting move for Ugly, given the rise of, you know, non-alc and sober curious. But we're sort of yet to try and test that. Part of that is to do with the fact that that industry, you know, was incredibly hard hit over the last year, so we haven't necessarily been able to experiment there. But equally, we are an incredibly small team with an enormous challenge. Like if you think about when you go into a supermarket and you think about what you see on the shelf and you think about the size of a fridge in the UK, it is really just mainstream brands. And when you think about the big brands of the last 10 years, it is like, it is Coke, it is Pepsi, it is Red Bull. It's quite a difficult space to break through in. And I think knowing that, we as a team understand that we've really got to have a lot of focus, and we've got, you know, a hell of a lot of work still to do in the supermarkets and online and with our current community. So I think really for us, we'll probably be hyper focused on sort of having the most available distribution. And for us, that likely means kind of the independence, and it makes more sense for us to be in, and the big supermarkets in the UK. And in the US, that's looking at some of these kind of exciting chains that might fit our product, like Target, which is incredibly favorable to sort of small and exciting and growing brands. So yeah, I think that for us will be the focus, but that's not to say as Ugly grows and expands, we won't dip into other areas there as well.
And it sounds to me like you managed to get into the US relatively quickly. You know, thinking about other startups that I've spoken to, within 3 years or so, having significant distribution in the US is amazing. I've got two questions for you. One is, because that is the home of Big Soda, and I think you put the words in my mouth, so I'm not going to take credit for it. So you've created the category. That's the home of Big Soda. And sticking your tongue out, again, your words to Big Soda. How do they react to that?
You know, we've had indicators that sometimes Ugly is being watched, but I feel like we've never had any sort of big debates or big arguments out there. I think Big Soda is probably very comfortable that no one's coming and taking its space anytime soon. But we're there and we're growing. And I think, you know, at some point, maybe they'll regret being so comfortable. That sounds really threatening.
I think they're listening, and they're probably looking at a 3-year plan to work out when is going to be the best time to acquire you. Because that's inevitably what they're going to do. Those big businesses, if you start to be a threat, they will just acquire you.
Maybe that sort of conversation will be on the cards for the future. But I think for us, we are just at a stage of the business where we are hyper focused on our mission. And that is just giving people more options. Like, I probably should take a step back and say, we make it sound like being a challenger brand makes it sound like it's a fight all the time. And really, like, if you guys had come on this podcast today and had like a big sugary drink, I would not have, you know, I would not have hung up. I would have been like, cool, you fancy that today. We're not necessarily like anti people consuming the things they want to consume. For us, it's just the fact that I think on shelf, there is a real limiter on the amount of options people have. And, you know, my personal experience, like I said, as a soda addict has been that I don't think I was drinking soda necessarily because I loved it, because certainly when I drank, you know, when I started to drink Ugly regularly, I realized that was just as good, if not better. I was like, I'm refreshed. This is a super nice flavor. And now a lot of the time when I drink more sugary stuff, it tastes quite syrupy. That also doesn't mean I don't want to like stuff my face with cake some days. And I think for us, it's kind of just about making sure that our customers and, you know, people who are shopping just have the option to make a healthier choice that doesn't feel like it sucks. and that's what we're there to do. So I make it sound like it's some sort of crazy David and Goliath. Sometimes it is, but other times it is just about, you know, trying to help out and be there and be for everyone. I think Ugly, as much as we're a challenger brand, it's also quite like a friendly, silly brand.
So you've clearly done quite a lot from a relatively small marketing budget, especially kind of as you've grown and as a challenger, as you kind of explained. If you were granted a much larger marketing budget, where would you look to spend that investment?
Do you know, I think even if we had a ginormous marketing budget, I mean, my temptation from what I'd love to do would be to go create some like insane Super Bowl advert that gets shared everywhere and is incredibly viral. And I think I'd enjoy that so much. But I think what Ugly is actually, where Ugly would actually resonate most and the most kind of sensible thing for us to do with that budget would actually be to just scale up the kind of the Ugly army that we have, so to speak. So we at the moment work with like a few hundred Ugly ambassadors. They're mostly Gen Z TikTokers that create absolutely mental content for Ugly. A guy filled a bath with Ugly the other week and got in it. So like that's sort of like very silly stuff. And I think as much as it's sometimes tempting, we could be like, oh, we've got this huge budget. What kind of crazy celebrity should we work with? Actually, where Ugly is most powerful is kind of in numbers. And I think where we've designed a brand to be accessible and for everyone, we have to kind of think about that mentality as we grow. And actually what I'd love to do is turn that sort of ambassador pool of, you know, a few hundred people into like the tens of thousands and actually be working at like huge scale on a sort of more one-to-one basis with creators. And I think that is the most challenging thing to get right. You know, how do you like scale, but also still maintain that level of connectivity? And some of the things we're looking at for next year is our partnerships and how we can maybe collaborate with some really sort of exciting people on what those next flavors would be. And I can't give away any of the fun ideas just yet because it's still yet to come. But that could be an exciting thing to do, is like who could you work with on that kind of flavor concept in the future as well. So that would maybe be one I would bookmark. And I'd probably do the TV ad just for the fun of it too.
So on the subject of flavors, I know we've spoken about your co-creation and some of the more out there flavors, let's say, that you've done before. But we know that some startups, even the fastest scale-ups and startup companies, struggle to bring out new products, you know, within a year, let alone every month. So how do you go about doing that and getting it out so quickly? And are there any flavors that have surprised you, both performing well, but also those that you thought would perform well but didn't?
When we were starting to talk about this idea of limited edition flavors and this sort of idea of co-creation, it was actually the Christmas holidays, and Hugh, our co-founder, called myself and Sophie. Sophie is our global head of product and operations. She's a total G. And he called us up in the holidays and he was like, I want to launch a new flavor every month. And we were like, it's the holidays. obviously both like, what on earth are we talking about here? Where we realized that Ugly was kind of perfect for this program was that we have a product that you can endlessly innovate on. Like I said, you can do rain ugly, you can do pizza ugly. You're kind of using a combination of natural flavors where you can mimic so many different flavors and tastes. So that's sort of, the possibilities are endless. We had a team that we knew would like stay up all night. We have an incredible sort of, we have like a smaller design agency who are incredibly nimble and quick at like replicating a lot of the work that JKR had designed. So they will create lots of these different flavor icons and designs, roll them out super quickly. And then we have a D2C platform and a community that we knew would be excited by this. So it felt like all of these kind of jigsaw pieces of what we would need to do were perfectly in place for us to launch this program. That is not to say it doesn't come without challenges. I don't think Sophie slept in like 12 months. She'll probably be listening to this being like, why isn't making it sound so easy? So it is like a lot of work. It is a lot of kind of moving parts and stress, but it's so worthwhile in terms of what we get back from it that there's no way we can't keep doing it. Flavor-wise, I think the one that surprised me the most on a personal level is the marshmallow seltzer, because like that is quite, I mean, some people will be like, that's disgusting. It's marshmallow water. Like that sounds totally mental. And it is, I personally find it like weirdly refreshing. Like I feel like I'm having this super refreshing beverage. And then I'm like, wait, I've just drank what tastes like loads of marshmallows. It's such a crazy concept. And whether it's something that would work like in a retail environment, I don't know, but I drank, I reckon, when we launched that at the end of July, probably about 20 cans in the space of maybe 4 or 5 days. It's actually quite gross to admit. but yeah, so that's been the one that surprised me most in the terms of like its flavor composition. I think I kind of joked about it earlier. I think pumpkin spice was the biggest learning for us. We were trying to do something that was so, you know, pumpkin spice is coined as that sort of like, you know, the Starbucks flavor, the kind of like, oh, it's a bit, I think basic's a bit of a mean word, but that's how people would describe it. And we thought we could do it in a really ugly way and like rebel against that. We made so many jokes about Uggs and fall and scarves and Starbucks. And I feel like it just, we actually probably overcomplicated the message for the customer. And I think that it was just a bit confusing and people were kind of like, what's going on? They've gone mad. But we kind of talk internally about Ugly now being the Willy Wonka of seltzer. It's actually Hugh's favorite film also. So I think it kind of like fits the brand, fits the mission. And it's kind of like you have to fail on some of them, right? It's like a fail fast environment. You're doing one a month. They're not always going to work. And it's so much fun seeing how they do perform. So yeah, lots more to come in that space. Lots more crazy flavors. Some will be great. Some will not. We'll see.
We had the opportunity to try the marshmallow flavor, and yeah, it's it starts out as a bit of a strange sensation because you're expecting to kind of eat it and then get that sickly sweet feeling in your stomach and it all to feel a bit too much. But yeah, it's an interesting taste for sure, especially in this kind of drink format, but also understanding that it's zero calories, zero sugar, all natural. It's very it's very strange. in terms of your own, do you have a personal favorite flavor from your whole portfolio that's, you know, not just your new ones but your more kind of everyday flavors as well?
I would just highly recommend our cherry, because I think if you are someone who drinks maybe sugary and sweetened products, the cherry like packs punch on flavor, whereas like seltzers are light in flavor naturally. Like they are products without any sugar, without any sweetener. They're going to taste not exactly the same as your full fat Coke. But the cherry in particular, just because I think it's the type of fruit that is, just gives you a bit of flavor punch. And as a previous ex-soda addict, I enjoy that.
You've spoken eloquently about if you had more money, you'd do the blockbuster ad. So now is the time for you to unveil what your favorite TV ad is. And as you know, we're speaking and we're listening, so use words to paint a picture to help people picture the ad as you describe it for us, please.
Yeah, so I have picked an ad that I love a lot, which is the Dream Crazier ad from the Nike series. So there is also a Dream Crazy ad, which is absolutely incredible too. Dream Crazier is an advert that showcases a bunch of different female athletes that are doing amazing things in their sport. But it also really challenges the idea of gender bias. The advert is narrated by Serena Williams, who also features in it, but it also has the likes of Chloe Kim and Ibtihaj Muhammad, who was the first Olympian to wear a hijab in the Olympics. And it also features Simone Biles, who has been in the news a lot, actually, after the Olympics this year, for taking a step back for her mental health, which got a lot of controversy. And I don't think anyone's maybe taking time to recognize that she's a 24-year-old who is literally the best in her field with the most medals. So there's lots of lines in the Dream Crazier ads that are like, if we show emotion, we're called dramatic. If we want to compete against men, we're nuts. It's a really provocative ad. It makes me really emotional and also just makes me think a lot. And like I said to you guys earlier, I think the best kind of adverts or the best kind of content is the content that makes you feel something, whether that's laughing your head off, crying, hope, anger. Content should make you feel something. And every time I listen to that ad, I always feel incredibly inspired seeing what these like incredible athletes have done. But I also, it also makes me think a lot about that idea of gender bias and, you know, men aren't allowed to cry, women are, you know, like the idea of like female hysteria that's been around for so long.
A woman running a marathon was crazy.
Officials tried to pull her off the course.
A woman boxing.
I just think crazy. Nike have done an incredible job of, I mean, they always have, but they do an incredible job of making sportswear something that is way bigger than sportswear. And it's so relevant to what they do as well. So, you know, it doesn't feel like they're talking about something that totally misses the mark of what their product is. But I basically will watch that advert and then suddenly decide I'm going to compete in the Olympics. Terrible at sport, by the way. But, you know, in my mind, I'm like, I watch this and I'm like, I could compete in the Olympics. And when I do it, I'm going to do it in a pair of Nike sports leggings. And I think that's the most incredible kind of advertising, that it makes you want to take action, and it makes you want to take action in the product they're talking about. I'm a huge fan of that advert and everything it makes me feel. And I think that's the motto of the story for me, is like, whether you're putting out like an email, a social post, an ad, whether you're creating the biggest campaign your brand's ever done, like you've got to take a step back and be like, is that going to make people feel something? That we as marketeers owe that to people, right? Otherwise we're just putting stuff out there that doesn't mean anything.
Or winning 23 Grand Slams, having a baby, and then coming back for more. Crazy, 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 and crazy. So if they want to call you crazy, fine. Show them what crazy can do.
So I'm sure we could sit and talk about seltzers and flavors and advertising all day, but unfortunately that is all we have time for. Thank you so much for joining us, Orla. It's been a very enlightening chat, learning all about the world of seltzer and Ugly. And I can't wait to see what your next flavor is going to be and how the brand grows.
Oh, thank you, guys. I have absolutely loved chatting to you both. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Wax Lyrical, the scale up and change up marketing podcast from Waxhorn. Please let us know what you think of this episode by rating us, or even better, by writing a short review on Apple Podcasts. We make the podcast in our spare time just for the love of it, and are so grateful to all our guests and to you, the listeners, for making it happen. It would mean a lot to us to hear that you enjoy it. Thank you.